Whenever I go to my doctor's office in Campbell, I notice a sign on the front door of the building. It reminds people that if they have a rash or their child has a rash, they should not enter by the front door, but go around to a side door. I always remember taking a sick child with a rash to the doctor and having to go around to the side door. I would knock and wait and maybe even have to knock again. When someone came to let us in, we had to wait in the hall until it was our turn to see the doctor. Now, in my mind, I knew this was for the best. I wouldn't want my kid getting some serious disease in the waiting room. But in my heart, I felt like an outcast. My experience with a sick child doesn't hold a candle to how people with leprosy were treated in the time of Jesus and throughout history. In the Hebrew scriptures, leprosy was a generic term used for all manner of skin diseases. If an Israelite got any kind of a skin condition, he was unclean and had to be isolated for fear that he would make others unclean. If a person had a rash from a virus or an infection but recovered, the priest could certify that it was safe for him to return to the community. If a person had Hansen's disease, as leprosy is known today, that person was not going to get better. Their separation from the community would be permanent. They were required to stay away from people and send out warnings, unclean, unclean, so that all would know to keep their distance. The gospel lesson is a wonderful story of healing, packed with details that we might easily overlook. Yet the details are clues for us about how we are to appropriate this story for ourselves. First of all, notice that Jesus is on the road, on his way to Jerusalem, his final journey. To get to Jerusalem from Galilee, a pious Jew would have to take the direct route through the territory of the dreaded Samaritans, think Taliban or Al-Qaeda here, or detour along the border, making a longer journey than was necessary. So Jesus is in strange territory, outside the boundaries of the familiar, when he encounters the 10 lepers. Oh, here's another detail. The gospel writer actually refers to them as 10 men with leprosy, rather than lepers, just as he had earlier referred to the man who was paralyzed rather than the paralytic, or the man possessed by demons rather than the demoniac. How Luke describes the men seems like such a small thing, yet it is important. The difference is subtle, but reflects a humanizing and dignifying recognition of personhood. These are people, not diseases. They have a disease, but it is not the sum total of their humanity. So the men with leprosy stand at a distance as the law required. The story tells us that Jesus saw them. Now, if you remember the story of the Good Samaritan, the priest and the Levite and the Samaritan all saw the man in the ditch, but only the Samaritan stopped to help him. And today's story in the gospel is preceded in the gospel text by Jesus blessing the disciples for what their eyes see and their ears hear. And this reference to Jesus seeing the lepers is echoed just a little later in the story when one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back. In both parts of the story, seeing means far more than physical sight, more than just looking. It means really seeing, paying attention. It's on the one hand, perceiving the opportunity to be merciful towards another, and on the other hand, the recognition that God's mercy had touched one's life. Whenever I hear this story, I am struck by the report of the healing. And it happened that as they were going, they were made clean. It was only when the men with leprosy took action, When they followed Jesus' directions to go and show themselves to the priest, that the healing took place. Our rector would call this cooperation with the divine initiative. Would life have been different for them if they had stayed put? Would they have been healed if they had doubted Jesus' word? For the story to work, they had to see in Jesus more than many others were able to see. They had to be cognizant of the presence of God and the man who stood before them, and to take a chance, to step out in faith that his words contained the gifts of God's healing mercy. We will never know if the tenth man, the one who returned to Jesus, ever made it to the priest to be certified as clean. What we do know is that his actions resulted in Jesus' commendation. All ten experienced healing, but the tenth man was able to see beyond his whole body to the one who had made it whole. His actions of delight and gratitude, which distinguish him from the others, demonstrate his trust in Jesus, God's agent of healing. But wait, there's more. And he was a Samaritan. We might miss that, but the original listeners and readers of this story must have been jolted by this little bit of information. Those five words would prompt some serious rethinking for those who heard them. Even Jesus himself referred to him as this foreigner, yet the ultimate outsider becomes for us a model of faith. We know that many of the people Jesus healed went on their way. Their lives had been changed by their encounter with Jesus, but that encounter seems to have been only a means to return to life as usual. Not all who were helped by Jesus came to faith in him. Perhaps they took their healing as a sign of what they had earned, a compensation of sorts for the suffering they had endured. Perhaps they were too busy living out their restored life to take the time for the response of the Samaritan. Perhaps the memory of the healing event faded until it lost its power. Whatever the reasons, the nine are impoverished by their lack of response. They become models of a sort of what faith is not. How do we appropriate this story? How do we let it inform our faith? This story is so much more than a pious reminder to write your thank you notes. Rather, it is a window for us that lets us peek at what a life of gratitude looks like. The subtle details of the story are a not-so-subtle reminder for us to pay attention. Last week, I was at La Burrita, a little Mexican restaurant near the seminary in Berkeley. It is nothing fancy, as you might guess, with close proximity to a school. It's and certainly not a gourmet spot. You order at the counter, and then when your number is called, pick up your food. While I was waiting for my order, I glanced around the room. I noticed a young man praying before he began to eat. Now, I have prayed in restaurants, though I must confess it never occurred for me to do so at La Burrita. But it's usually a short, perfunctory prayer. That young man, sitting alone in the midst of a busy restaurant, while not making a sound or a move, was doing some serious praying, I could just tell. And he became a window for me. He reminded me of what a life of gratitude looks like. His presence drew me like a magnet, even though I had only glanced at him briefly. Something told me that he knew what it was to be thankful in ways that I could never know. That young man became an icon for me. He was a reminder of the transforming power of thankfulness. It's often difficult for us to practice gratitude. We may continually compare what we want to what others have. A bigger house, more money, a cooler car, more money, a better job, more money, a thinner body, more money. We may be so busy focusing on what we want, we don't notice the good gifts of God that surround us every moment of our lives. Giving thanks, even for little things, and perhaps especially for little things, is a way for us to cultivate gratitude for God's work in our lives. When we begin to make a habit of gratitude, our hearts will become more open to God's presence in our lives. As we become people of gratitude, we will become more and more aware of God's goodness and God's generosity towards us. Our media-saturated culture tells us over and over that we don't have enough. We need more. We need more stuff. Being thankful reminds us of what we do have. So this week, remember the man who was healed and return to give thanks. Remember the young man who was able to be grateful for a simple meal. And choose to notice the myriad of blessings that surround us each day and be purposeful in nurturing the habit of thankfulness for God's abundant gifts.